Welcome to Outspoken, where we dive deep into the topics and intersection of technology, money, business, and passion. I'm your host, Shayna Cosgrove.
A lot of conservatories and a lot of more traditional classical music training teaches to focus just on the music, be as good as you can, and
then everything will come.
Right. And
which that's, is not true.
It's not how things work.
And it's not even about having the willpower to work. It's more about
knowing yourself,
knowing how you work, knowing how to plan for the long game. Those were very important concepts for me.
My favorite piece is whatever I'm playing. In some ways, to be a performer, you have to be in the moment and share that.
What you just heard was an excerpt performed by Nick Luby, one of the founders of The Concert Truck. Thank you both so much for being here on your Sunday afternoon. I know you two are really busy. Where are you today?
We just got back to Baltimore as of around 1 a.m.
Oh my goodness. So are you caffeinated?
A little bit.
Who does the driving?
Mostly Nick.
I did the first 36 hours to Dallas, except for, I think, about 20 minutes. But Susan did the last.
Well, the last little leg. I did like four hours.
The last five out of the last six.
Today, I'm here with Susan Jung and Nick Luby. Nick is my son's piano teacher. So God bless him. It's quite a challenge. He's getting better at sitting still as time has gone on.
That's a big deal.
Yes. So I have known Nick for, I think, about 3 years now. And it's been interesting because the lessons used to be at the school and now they're virtual. And Nick has said that you and Susan have very different styles in teaching piano. Now, Susan, are you still a piano teacher?
I'm still teaching at Gilman. I did cut down a little bit on my numbers just so we could focus a bit on Concert Truck during this particular time when we are in quite high demands.
What grades do you teach?
My youngest right now is probably around 6, and my oldest is in middle school. At Peabody, I'm teaching a sophomore class.
A sophomore in college class?
Yes.
And Nick, what about you?
Private students and through Gilman, 6 through 17, 18.
So when you graduated from music school, you both came to Gilman?
We did. I actually started at Gilman while I was still at Peabody. It just really worked out. We were so fortunate to be accepted into that community. They're very welcoming, and it's been a joy to teach there.
Do you have a day off from teaching?
The way that I have started to schedule things is I try to consolidate most of my teaching to certain days. So, for example, Tuesday and Thursday are really big teaching days for me. And then on the other days, I can really focus on other things. And then I can do things in the cracks on Tuesdays and Thursdays as I need to.
What about you, Nick?
I teach Monday through Thursday, 4 or 5 hours. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday has been reserved for performing and everything else.
But when we're on tour, it's every day, all day performing. So there's not a lot of time for teaching. We just did a residency in Dallas and the schedule was on average about 6 days a week. We were active with them. Being active meaning 1 to 3 concerts a day. I tried my best to teach on our day off as much as I could.
You two are a romantic couple, yes?
Yes.
You know, the mothers were like, I'm not sure, I think. Then we saw an Instagram photo of you two cuddling. And so that was the tell, but we weren't sure. Did you meet at work? Did you meet at Gilman?
We met in South Carolina in graduate school through a mutual friend before I had come to study there. We were in the same studio. We had the same teacher and we became friends. And one thing led to another. When I came to Susan with the idea for the Concert Truck, she immediately said, you know, we have to do this.
That happened pretty early on in the relationship, actually. Mm-hmm.
We'd been dating officially maybe only
less than a
few
year,
months.
So, yeah.
you've had this concert trek idea cooking for a long time. When did it officially kick off then?
We got our initial funding for the very basic MVP in November 2015. Mm-hmm. And then we built the first prototype in April of 2016, which was a very basic thing. It was like a rollout stage out of the back of a rental truck. It did not look nearly as nice as it does right now, but we were able to prove the concept at least. And we did about 8 concerts within 5 days. We did several at schools. We did some at various homes, like Children's Homes Recovery Center. And it was a really special experience. It was something that I think we both felt like we needed to do more of. And then so we just grew the concept from there.
How did the idea even come about?
I actually happened to be in Baltimore when I was thinking about it. And I was traveling with some family, didn't have a piano. Missed playing music, missed hearing music, and the places that we would stop and visit seemed like amazing places to have concerts. And I would find churches to practice in, and people would wander in off the street and just sit and listen to me practice. And so I started thinking, is there such thing as a mobile concert hall?
Are you the first one?
Our concept has been around in some different forms.
Various forms.
And the idea of a traveling piano has been around for a long time. There are great pianists, concert artists of the 20th century who would tour little villages. You know, at the time, we hadn't heard of any mobile hall or venue. After we started, a couple of things popped up, but nothing quite like what we've put together.
Why wasn't using, say, an electronic piano something you did?
Actually, the instrument in the truck is digital.
It would be much more expensive.
Expense, yeah. Because you have to get it regulated and tuned, and then the truck should be climate controlled. And these are all things that we've thought of course. But for where we are right now, the instrument that we have is quite sophisticated.
It's a baby grand. It looks like a baby grand.
It's
technically called a mini grand.
And it's made by Roland.
How long into dating did you bring up this idea? How did that happen?
We started dating first, and then I actually think you came up with the idea before we started dating, but we didn't pull the trigger on it until after we started.
And also recently, a friend from graduate school at Michigan, I was talking to her and she said, I remember when you were talking about your concert truck idea drunk at my kitchen table. And this would have been in like 2013 or 14.
It's been percolating up there for
I
a
guess
long
so.
Time.
When you went to college, did you know you were going to go to graduate school immediately? Is that what you did?
Yeah, I think for musicians, that's pretty typical. We generally do bachelor's, master's, and then some kind of doctorate degree. And neither of us actually did the doctorate degree. We were interested in doing work outside of academia before considering academia. We just went to work after that.
I went to college loving music and having it be an important part of my life. And I played a lot in college. Halfway through, I realized I happened to have all the credits for a music major. And I was like, well, I guess I might as well.
You didn't go off to college saying I'm going to major in piano?
I went to a liberal arts school.
He went to Wesleyan.
I really didn't know. I was taking a lot of philosophy courses and a lot of music courses and others too, but eventually it came down to those two and I decided to do a double major. And then I had 2 amazing summers in the Czech Republic at a festival out there and met my next teacher. I'd say he's a big reason why I ended up going to graduate school in music.
What was your double major?
Philosophy and music.
And were your parents musicians?
My mom is a choral conductor and singer and pianist, and my father was a violinist.
Okay, so they weren't freaked out by the idea of you majoring in music at all?
Their advice to me was, if you can imagine doing anything else, do the other thing.
Why?
It's hard.
It's really hard.
It's hard.
And you have to do it because you love music so much that you have to. If you do it for any other reason, it doesn't make sense. There are easier pathways to getting what you want.
Money or other things.
Money, status, comfortable life, security, relationships. The only reason to do music is the music itself.
Do you sing and play violin as well?
No.
Why are you laughing, Susan?
He can sing. He's not a trained singer, though. I can't even
picture. It requires a lot of openness to sing, and I, maybe I'll get there.
I can't picture you playing the violin. Your parents were smart in making you play the piano because then you could play with them.
Well, apparently my dad tried to teach me violin when I was like 4 or 5. And I said, Dad, I already know everything there is to know about playing the violin. So he gave up that day.
Oh, no.
Do you have brothers and sisters that play instruments as well?
We are both only children.
So, Susan, what about you? Did you go off to college with a declared piano major?
I did. I had decided at some point in high school that I was going to major in piano. For a long time, I thought I was going to be a doctor, and I did really well in school. There was just something about it that called to me at that time. I met the right people. I started to really take it seriously when I was a teenager, and then went off to music school, and the rest is history.
What you just heard was a performance by Susan Zhang, one of the founders of The Concert Truck. What were your parents' feelings about you majoring in music?
So both of my parents are not musicians. They're both scientists, and it was a very foreign thing for them. They weren't thrilled about it, but they needed to let me ride it out. That's probably what they were thinking. I was also very fortunate at the time that the teacher that I was working with, who we both studied with, Marina Lamazov, she developed a good relationship with my parents and was very reassuring that, you know, wasn't going to be as bad as they thought it was. But it's possible, you know, it's not an insane idea to have a good life.
Since I do have probably a lot of parents who are pushing their kids into music or wondering if they should have their kids play music, at what age is the best age to start your kids in music?
Young. I would say, I mean, 6 is good. I've heard of people starting at 4, and it really depends on the kid, where they are in their development, how mature they are, how they can handle direction. I think both of us started when we were 6.
You know, it's never too early or too late. There's not so much you can do with a kid who's 1, 2, 3,
right.
4. Formal lessons generally are best to start around 6.
But you can still introduce music earlier than that.
At what level do you decide your kid can quit or push them to continue?
I don't know that I am always the one to make that call. I mean, if the kid really hates it, I have a friend, she had this kid who would come in and just would not cooperate at all and would say that she hated it. She would cry and at the thought of quitting would celebrate. You know, if they really, really hate it that much, maybe there would be a discussion. But I think, like you said, there are a lot of ups and downs with learning to play an instrument or really learning any craft well. I think that it's good to experience that even when you're young, because you learn that to get better at anything, you're going to have to feel those uncomfortable feelings. And that's an important part of the process. And to your point, I do think that there's something to be said about follow through, fulfilling the commitment, doing what you said you would do. It's an important skill.
Do you agree with that, Nick?
When kids have really strong feelings about piano, about music, negative feelings, it's usually not about music, in my experience. It's about themselves,
right,
and their relationship to what they're doing. And
yeah, the feelings are complicated.
Every now and then I'll meet someone who says, I don't really like music.
But in general, people like music.
Yeah.
I think it's part of our DNA to express ourselves.
I've come to see it as my duty to ensure that I teach a healthy relationship with music.
As teachers, if the student has very strong negative feelings towards making music, instinctually, the first thing that we usually think about is, what am I doing wrong, right? It's not the kid is not talented or the kid can't do it. It's, okay, I'm approaching it wrong. I'm not tapping into something that the kid could potentially do really well. When you play an instrument, the goal often is to make it sound as much as your voice. To experience someone who is being vulnerable in front of you is a powerful experience. I mean, that's what they pay us the big bucks to do, right? And that's why it's hard, you know? And not everyone can do that, not just from a skill point of view, but from an emotional point of view as well.
singing, you have more freedom to deviate a little bit. You can cut that note a little shorter, but with piano, my God, you have the right hand and you have the left hand. That really is challenging your brain, and then it's very precise.
Yeah, there is a kind of a precision in performing, particularly in the current performance practice that we have.
I was going to say, music. I think a lot of that is cultural.
A lot of it is cultural, because actually when a lot of this music was written, improvisation was a big thing. And a lot of these pieces are actually just a written down improvisation.
I've never heard that before in my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
I only knew that for jazz.
No, I mean, jazz grew out of that tradition, but originally classical music was within that tradition.
Even Bach.
Oh, yeah. Oh, especially Bach.
Really?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think, and somehow over time, there's been this sacrosanct kind of attitude towards the repertoire where it became this like holy thing and we couldn't touch it. And I don't think that that was actually the spirit under which these compositions were actually created.
Bach, Mozart, Beethoven,
they
Chopin
all improvised.
Were all known
great
as
improvisers.
Great improvisers. And if you're a great improviser, then you're automatically a good composer, because improvisation is spontaneous composition.
Right. Composition is just a bit more intentional about what you're saying and putting down. Nick improvises a little bit. I am completely uncomfortable doing it.
Me too. I cannot deviate.
Exactly. And so it'll be interesting to see how the practice evolves, because I think a lot of people, especially in our age, are really waking up to that and don't think it should be in that way. We want to bring back the composer-performer, that idea, which was so much more prevalent in even the 20th century and before that than it is now.
Going back to the children, in short, I am okay making my son play piano regardless of his emotions or his rolling emotions about it. You nodded. This is a podcast. So.
Oh, yes. Okay.
They're saying yes. They both looked at me and nodded.
My piano teacher used to always tell me, it doesn't matter how much God-given talent you have. It really doesn't. Like, I've been in this business for long enough to see who is successful and who's not. And the people who are successful are the people who show up. It doesn't matter if they're the most brilliant people in the world. They show up, they do a good job, they do their best, people respond to that. And also, you just get better when you show up. So eventually, you know, in terms of the level, it all kind of evens out in the end.
Yeah, I agree. And I definitely think that that is true in business. You'll try things. Some things will work. Some things won't. So backing up to the concert truck, Nick has this idea. You're both in grad school at this time, and Susan is in grad school and working up at a Baltimore school, and Nick comes up. And at what point does the truck become real? What year was this?
So there was a period of time where we did long distance. I was in Baltimore. This is before I was teaching at Gilman, but I was still in school. And Nick was in South Carolina. And it was during that time that we got the truck that we have.
Our first truck, we built a big wooden stage that rolled out of the back of a budget truck. And we gave our first concerts with that.
How did you design it?
We built it with some friends.
You get some mechanical engineers lined up?
Yes. Someone who knew what he was doing. We ended up having 200 or 300 pound, maybe, piano on it, and it could have had a car.
Yeah. It's funny, you have these expectations for what you think it's going to be, and then you try it out and then you're totally wrong.
So the following year, actually slightly less than a year later, Susan managed to get us a donation of a box truck in California. And so my best friend and I flew him out, and we drove the truck back in 40 hours, door to door.
How did you fund the stage in the beginning?
We won an award through our school, a Creativity and Music Award, that was matched by a local nonprofit that supports artists at the beginning of their careers. And we also got a grant from the South Carolina Arts Commission.
When was it established as a business?
Well, even before our first concerts.
I think we always thought about it as that, because we had both been taking a lot of entrepreneurship classes at University of South Carolina. And so we were already imagining in that direction. We had that mindset already. We went into it with the idea that it would be a business.
What even prompted you to take entrepreneurship classes? Was that unusual for graduate students in music to be taking entrepreneurship classes?
The culture in South Carolina is very geared towards that. I think in general, music schools are starting to understand that it is difficult to get traditional jobs. There's just a lot of people and very few slots. And even beyond that, I think the music world in general is starting to see that it needs to be more creative in how it relates itself to the community. We were starting to see a lot of that crop up. I remember being in grad school at Eastman, and a lot of my friends who are not pianists, they would come up with these projects, and I was so inspired by that. So I was kind of hungry to do something new, different. And when I learned about this program, I thought it'd be interesting to learn a little bit more about that.
I don't even know if I knew the word entrepreneur while I was in college. There was nothing about entrepreneurship. I didn't know that people started businesses. So I think that's really interesting that as music majors and graduate students, you knew to pursue this other way of thinking of how will I make money outside of get a job and then I will have a job.
If you're a private piano teacher, you're an entrepreneur because you run your own business. You are a business.
You work for yourself. I've been teaching since I was 15.
Yeah.
A lot of conservatories and a lot of more traditional classical music training teaches to focus just on the music, be as good as you can. And then
everything will come.
Right. And
which that's is not true.
It's not how things work. As I got more into the industry and into the work, it seemed like, well, if I want things to happen, I have to make them happen.
Right. And I think there's something very liberating about that too. It's scary for sure. I think my parents still want me to get a college job right now, but not having to follow those rules and to kind of make up your own, it gives you a kind of freedom that's really, really nice.
The excerpt you just heard was performed by both Nick Luby and Susan Jong, founders of The Concert Truck. Nick, was this influenced for you by your parents having essentially been musicians for a living? Was your motivation to perhaps do something different than pure lessons or work for a school?
I do have a bit of an anti-establishment streak
and so do
a disruptive nature. My parents, you know, they're both musicians, but they both had jobs with universities. When I was growing up, that seemed like the way to do it, the safe pathway. I graduated college in 2011, and I was seeing like nobody's getting jobs.
Everyone's doing everything right and not getting a job. So
this is not safe.
You know, what's really interesting is that a lot of times you think you want a job because of what you think it is, what you think the job entails. But a lot of times you don't really even know. You just make assumptions about it. And if you sit down and you think of what it is that you like about that job or the idea of that job, and you just like write down those things, you find that maybe it's not that job, or you can do those things doing something else. It's just really being clear with yourself about why you're doing something.
Let's jump back and tell me about how you got the truck to start with. And what's the truck's name? Please tell me you gave it a name.
The concert truck.
The concert
you never
truck.
Named your truck?
That's the name of the truck.
She's very formal.
Yes, she is a okay. She. We determined that.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like everything that I've ever gotten business-wise or through life, it's just been through networking.
Susan has a relentless personality, and she's very inspiring and, you know, has a clear vision and works incredibly hard. People want to support her.
I feel like having a strong network is really important.
Well, how did you grow a network all the way in California, right? You talk about Eastman and Peabody and then a truck from California. How the heck does that happen?
This is one of the best parts from going to music school is that after that, all of your friends are like all over the country, right? And some of them don't go into music, but they're all like very high achieving people. So they end up doing things and having other resources. So it was really about just making friends in school, keeping in touch, and people introduce you to other people. What's interesting about musicians is we all know that we're all hustling. So if one of us needs help, It's like we all kind of just come together and help each other because we know what's really going on. It's a community.
This podcast is sponsored by Nyla Technology Solutions, an SBA-certified 8A, HubZone, woman-owned small business specializing in full-stack software engineering and data science services to the U.S. government. Our innovative solutions are built to match the speed of mission. For more information, partnering opportunities, and new job openings, please visit our website, www.nyla.io. Now, Nick, did you do anything fun while you drove Ms. Concert Truck back to Baltimore?
I was still living in South Carolina at the time, and so I flew my friend from Greenville, North Carolina, and I met him from Columbia, South Carolina. And we flew out and brought the truck back, and we were both back home in 40 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So we...
were you doing 5-hour energy shots?
I think we got some Red Bull. So we didn't stop driving.
Yeah. They just switched.
So we went to Walmart. There was snow on the ground. And we bought a broom and an air mattress and a sleeping bag and a bunch of candy. So this was an old ServPro truck. And ServPro is like fire and flood restoration. So it was a mess. And we swept it up, put a mattress down there, and took turns driving and sleeping. We only stopped for a steak in Texas. Still
just
eating
before
meat.
Before he was vegan, yeah.
That was the only time we stopped for, more than an hour.
You're back in Baltimore with this empty ServPro truck. What's the process to convert it? And how did you decide how to convert it? Who came up with the designs?
At the time, it was in South Carolina while I was still in Baltimore. And it was just a lot of our friends. We had engineers work on it. We had architects. And then a lot of in-kind support from our friends, like our network. And we all just kind of came together and built the thing. And that was it. It's been under several modifications as we've gone on and done this many, many times over many years. We found that we needed certain things, and so we would just add things on. It's been a real labor of love.
Right. It's been a labor of love from the beginning, and it's undergone upgrades.
Where was your first concert?
Our first concert was in Baltimore, in Fells Point on Dallas Street. A friend of ours set up a little block party.
What did you play?
Barber Souvenirs.
Like Kapustin?
Kapustin, Chopin.
Rachmaninoff.
You alternate who plays?
Yeah, we play together a lot, actually. Most of the times we play together. People seem to really like that.
Who's on the right and who's on the left?
So usually I'm playing primo, which is the high notes, and he plays the low notes, secondo. But recently we've been experimenting with switching around.
You're in what year of having the concert truck?
From when we had the idea, it's been 5 years. And we've had this truck. It will be 4 years in February.
In February.
What kind of business is it? An LLC? An S-Corp?
It's an LLC.
At the moment, it's an LLC.
That was not really by design. It just was the easiest thing to do.
Is it 50-50 between the two of you? Are there other partners involved?
No, it's just us. Yeah.
How do you resolve differences of ideas then? Is there a power struggle?
We're starting to figure out a rhythm.
It's complicated, especially because we're also together, So
yeah, my husband and I are in
business.
That's
right.
Together.
So you're familiar. We should talk.
So tell me a little bit about the marketing for the business and how you made up this big plan. How did you line up all of these concerts?
I hustle a lot.
And the pandemic changed things.
The pandemic did change things because we were,
all of a
they
sudden,
needed us.
All of a sudden we're...
It wasn't just a good idea. It was like they
some
needed
us. Some of the only
us,
people
yeah.
in the country who can present concerts in a way that
is professional
and normal. Mm-hmm. Like this is normal for us to give concerts like this. Like this is our thing.
So it was a boon for your business.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was.
Just right place at the right time.
It really did help. But yeah, we managed ourselves. We just hustle a lot. We make the calls. We write the emails.
How do you do your research to know who is potentially going to want you to come and give a concert?
trial and error.
It is trial and error, but it's also, you know, you look at kind of what presenters are doing and you kind of look at where their gaps are, what they need, and then you just see what fits, you know, and it's just a lot of having conversations and really understanding the needs of everybody.
Tell us a little bit about the big tour that you just did.
We started working with first the Kennedy Center. We were working with the Washington National Opera to help them present their K-Fritz young artists. And we also performed with them a little bit. Then we had a residency at the University of South Carolina, which is our alma mater, where we were working with students and they're putting on programs to celebrate local heroes. So we were going to be performing and coaching the students as well. We also did something with the Southeastern Piano Festival, which is also in South Carolina. We were performing alongside the finalists of the Arthur Fraser International Competition. And these are like some of the top pre-college kids in the country. So it was really, really fun to have them on the track. And then after that was the Big Kahuna. We had our month-long residency with the Dallas Symphony Orchestra, which is a major orchestra in the country. It's extremely high level. Their CEO is phenomenal and she's very creative and just saw the potential for us to be in Dallas and being a big hit. And so it was really great. We did 45 concerts. Some of them were just the two of us representing the DSO, but a lot of them also involved DSO musicians. So we got to play with them and that was just, it was a lot of fun. We made a lot of friends, both in the orchestra and in the community. It was a lot. I mean, talking about sweat equity, geez. But
45 concerts in 33 days.
How much new music did you have to learn for it?
We each learned like 7 or 8 pieces.
They were not extremely difficult pieces. Okay. They're show pieces, things that we could put together easily. We were very strategic about it, and they were very strategic about it. So
yeah. We only had about a week to put it together.
Mm-hmm. Less than that. I mean, I think some of the music we got while we were on the road.
And was that the first time you've been together that long and that intensely? And where are you sleeping, by the way? Are you sleeping in the truck?
No.
We had really nice accommodations provided by them.
They provide us great accommodations. They took care of us. We spend a lot of our day together. We're very used to each other.
One of the best things for relationships is actually doing new things and having adventures together. So
that's true.
Not only is the business an adventure, but literally your business involves adventures. And I'm sure living through traveling, growing a business, adjusting your current work schedules and keeping that going is a high degree of stress. So if you two can survive that, that's a good test too.
That's true. We've been through a lot. It's a very exciting time for sure.
And who does the marketing for you all?
We do it ourselves.
We do it ourselves.
Susan does social media.
Are you live streaming any of your concerts?
We did some live streams like that were just specifically for live streaming, but generally the live concerts that we do, because we're playing with other people, we avoid that unless we get permission from all parties, which is a little bit more complicated.
So what's up for you this spring, summer?
We have a lot of things that we're in talks for. We are going back to Dallas and then we're going back to South Carolina. We'll be in North Carolina with the Four Seasons Chamber Music Festival for a week. And then we are also going to continue our partnership with the Kennedy Center in May.
What a great foundation. I mean, you have such great partnerships set up already.
We're really, really fortunate and excited.
Before we go, what book have you read that's really influenced you and your career?
There's a book about willpower by Kelly McGonigal that I really, really enjoyed. A lot of my books center around like work and how to work.
Do you feel like you needed a book on willpower?
I think that my relationship with willpower was difficult for a long time. And it's not even about having the willpower to work. Yeah. It's more about
knowing yourself,
knowing how you work, knowing how to plan for the long game. Those were very important concepts for me.
Is there a favorite piece of music that you particularly love to listen to and or play?
My favorite piece is whatever I'm playing. In some ways, to be a performer, you have to be in the moment and share that.
Having that conviction and then delivering that. So you have to really love what you're playing in the moment.
The final question is, tell me something about yourself that might surprise others.
I've gotten really into like street style hip hop dancing lately.
That does surprise me. Does Nick do it with you?
No.
Do you do it to a video? How did you get into it?
Yeah, I mean, there are videos out there that are helpful for like just getting the basics and simple steps, but I also take classes.
At Peabody?
No, they're virtual now, but yeah, it's a really great way to exercise, but you're also very engaged when you're doing it.
And it's fun, right? It goes by fast.
Super fun. It's hard. Speaking of doing things that you're not good at and they're challenging, that's definitely one of them.
Well, thank you for letting me pick your brains about music and exploring the business. It's really exciting to see what you guys are doing.
This was so much fun.
This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having us on.
Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast. Please be sure to share it with friends and family. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn under the Outspoken Podcast. Thanks again, and chin up, heads up, eyes forward.